You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
They seem to be business friendly.
Business friendly environment.
The Supreme Court's latest term was the most business friendly in recent memory.
We have a much more business friendly administration.
Business friendly is, I don't know, I never thought about that.
Politicians often use buzzwords from phrases like media elite, fake news, death tax, welfare state. Some of these seem straightforward enough, and others might take some explanation. After the recent election cycle, a Michigan radio listener reached out to us with a question.
My name is Ellen Rustin, and I was raised in the Ann Arbor-Chelsea region, and I'm a former business owner. I heard the interview with Senator Shirky, and he was talking about making Michigan more business friendly, and it started me questioning, what does that mean exactly?
So we're looking for answers to that question. What does business friendly actually mean? We reached out to business leaders and business owners throughout the state for some definitions, and we've put together a series of conversations. Today, we dig into what the phrase business friendly means for women and minority business owners in Michigan. Here now is Terry Barkley. She's president of Inforum, a nonprofit with offices in Detroit and Grand Rapids focused on the advancement of women in business. Also with us is Jamil Robinson. He's the founder of Grand Rapids Area Black Businesses, and it's a pleasure to welcome both of you to Stateside.
Thanks for having
me. Great to be here.
We wanted to find out what business owners think when they hear politicians use that term business friendly. What do they think politicians mean? So we checked around a little bit. Here's what we heard.
My name is Ryan Akowski. I'm the owner of State of Comics in downtown Plymouth. The purpose of a politician using any trendy phrase is to get business owners to back them. And that's literally it, in my opinion. I don't think it has any meaning at all to them. I just think that they are trying to get votes.
Jamil, what do you think when you hear Ryan say that? And again, he's reacting to when he hears politicians talk about the fact that they want Michigan to be business friendly.
I do believe most of it is rhetoric that they use on the campaign trail. But it's also come to who are they making the state or the environment business friendly toward. And so they could have a certain demographic of folks that they are interested in making it business friendly for, but it doesn't, it may not include every aspect of the business community in this multifaceted relation.
And Terry, what's your take on Ryan's comment?
Well, I think Jamil makes a great point. You know, the business community is very diverse, and so business friendly means very different things if you're a Fortune 500 company versus a shop in Plymouth or a startup tech company. And it all relates, I think, to that access to opportunity, removing any regulatory barriers that are limiting your growth, and providing that access to capital that helps you grow. Politicians, I think, you know, I think they're authentically interested, many of them anyway, in creating a more business-friendly environment. And the newer elected officials, I've seen them do a lot of listening to understand what that means and how they can help.
Let's listen to another business owner's point of view.
My name is April Anderson. I am the co-owner and pastry chef here at Good Cakes and Bakes, which is in the city of Detroit on the Avenue of Fashion. So for me, a person who wants to make their agenda business friendly would definitely offer more incentives for small business owners when it comes to hiring, offer more tax credits, more initiatives to offer resources within the city to small business owners. That's what I would like to see if you say your agenda is business-friendly, opposed to the current situation where it's more corporate-friendly, where the tax breaks and tax abatements and credits are being given to billionaire business owners and business owner, you know, corporations to get you to come into the city or come into the state. So we're offering you all of these great tax credits and these tax abatements, and then the load of that is being pushed off onto small business owners.
So April clearly believes Michigan is much more corporate or billionaire friendly than small business friendly. Kind of building on what you said, what do you want to add to that, Jamil?
Yeah, it's definitely more geared towards the corporate. Even when you look at some of the abatements and incentives that are offered, is usually a high cost to even be able to access those incentives. So if you're a business owner and you buy an older property, and it may qualify for a brownfield abatement, but the application cost and things like that can be prohibitive for smaller businesses. And so they usually opt not to take advantage of tax abatements. And so if you're making it business friendly, you want to be able to lower the cost of entry to these different abatements, whether it's, you know, the neighborhood enterprise zones and so on and so forth that require a higher dollar match, especially if we're looking at businesses that are in underserved and disadvantaged communities. The barriers could be the application fees that the city charges just to submit different forms and so on and so forth, whether you're looking for it, whether it's code. So it's not a tiered system. And so the abatements here and the tax incentives here is, you know, if a multi-million dollar or billion dollar company needs to fill out a form and have a process through the city, they're going to pay the same amount as a mom and pop or a lifestyle business or a small business owner. And so the cost of entry can be steep for businesses when it comes to that.
So, in other words, Dan Gilbert has no problem with anything that costs for brownfield credits, but businesses like April's would.
Yes.
We're speaking with Terry Barkley, the president of Inforum, a nonprofit focused on the advancement of women in business in Michigan, and Jamil Robinson, creator and founder of Grand Rapids Area Black Businesses, as we kind of dig into what does it mean when politicians say they want Michigan to be business friendly? What does business friendly actually mean? And actually, I put that question recently to Michigan House Speaker Lee Chatfield when he was on stateside. Let's listen to what he said.
I think business friendly means that we're going to trust the business environment to work for itself rather than government always having the answer. And I think when we look around the state and policies that we've adopted over the past several years, our economy has boomed. And the reason is Lansing doesn't always have the answers. And we need on the state of Michigan a big sign that says open for business. Because the fact is when businesses are doing well in our state and our economy is doing well, that means the people are doing well. And I think that's what it means to be business friendly.
Jamil, is there a sense from that answer from Speaker Chatfield that, it's on businesses rather than the government always having the answer? Did you pick that up?
I did. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think government definitely plays a role. And government should be a facilitator of that. Just leaving it to the hands of businesses can be a thing, especially, you know, in the system in which we have in this country, which is capitalism. It can lead to greed. And so if we're just open for business, but, you know, we're not making sure that the people and the employees and labor is taken care of, I think we are seeing the results that we're seeing right now. So even though there has been growth, it's been growth of low income jobs, and we haven't seen that. And so government can definitely come in one of the ways in which was changed recently was the minimum wage law. And so when ballot initiatives and things like that to try and make it, you know, the paid sick leave and things like that, that's where government can step in and make sure that businesses are being actually good for Michigan and not good just for themselves. And so and also government can help regulate to make sure that businesses are making sure that there's dignity when it comes to the type of employment that they're offering. And so not just saying, oh, well, you have any job, but you have to work five jobs and also do Uber and Lyft and Ship in order to make it in the state.
To the point of sick time and minimum wage, that was opposed, though. Those ideas were opposed by many small businesses, were they not, saying they would be hurt if those were enacted?
Yeah, but, you know, they did say that it will be hurt if it's enacted in that way. And so government needs to be a facilitator in helping to alleviate some of those burdens that will be put on small businesses. And so through, like April said, a comment before, is different kind of incentives and abatements for smaller employees who can't necessarily face the brunt of the implementation of those. And so we see different kind of abatements and incentives for different companies. Like if you take in a returning citizen, there's different tax abatements and things like that. And so if government is creative in the way in which it uses its current tax base, but then also see how it can have businesses be more equitable in that sense, I think you wouldn't necessarily see small businesses, I don't think, would be as opposed if they knew that the government would assist in some way in meeting those needs and breaking some of those changes that, as far as minimum wage and paid sick time.
Terry Barkley, what's your take on that question of sick time and minimum wage?
Well, the women business owners that I know have varying opinions about that. I have heard some small business owners be very supportive of that because, interestingly, when you get to the issue of access to talent and competing for top talent, even though this was going to create more of a burden for them to meet, they recognized that in order to compete with top talent, they needed to be able to compete with some of the large corporations where people can choose to go to work. In this environment where we have close to zero unemployment by some measures, anything that we can do to level out the playing field for access to talent is seen as helpful for some. I really think, though, it's important to focus on the bigger issues around what it means to be business friendly, because different industries, different sizes of companies are going to have different takes on regulation and tax policy and incentives. But the core issues that I just hear coming up over and over again are about access to capital, access to talent, and access to opportunity and networks. And I do think that there's things from a policy perspective that can be done there. Here's a startling statistic for you to just dramatize a little bit of how big an issue it is. In 2018, all female founders combined received $10 billion less in funding than the e-cigarette company Juul took in by itself during that year. Mm-hmm. There's a group, PitchBook, that tracks data. It's a data company that tracks investments, and they just show again that the progress is stalled, that female-led startups got just 2.2% of all venture capital funding in 2018. 2.2%. Mm-hmm. And that is the exact same number as they had in 2017. So, you know, when you think of what really provides the fuel for growing a company, access to capital has got to be up there. And so what can we do? We need to face up to the data about women and minority-led firms and realize that we still really don't have a level playing field out there. I don't know what you think, Jamil.
No, I definitely agree. Access to capital is by far the largest issue, I believe, in the African-American business community here in Michigan, but even nationally. Being able to access capital when you need, so responsive capital, but also some of the CDFIs and other non-traditional lenders, it takes anywhere from 3 to 6 months to be able to access those funds. And, you know, that's usually, you know, the time in which a business could potentially go out of business waiting for that infusion of capital. And so we have to look at creative ways in which we can get capital into businesses' hands a lot quicker, but then also access to capacity building opportunities. And so, and that comes through like procurement in a lot of different ways, you know, from the public sector, looking at some of their largest bids. So here in Grand Rapids, if there's, you know, like 100 parks and they all need plow service, and the city is going to put that up for bid, instead of putting out all 100 parks to be bid by one huge company, how can we break those bids down to some of the smaller businesses? Those businesses are just starting, so then they have opportunities to one, build the capacity to serve larger and larger bids and contracts by getting that initial contract win, so they can build the capacity, can expand their fleet and those type of things like that. But if it's always going to the largest of the largest businesses, then there are no opportunity for small businesses and African-American businesses to be able to get on to some of those vendor opportunities. I think that's where we're losing out.
So the capital, the networking, the being thought of, the saying, for example, to cities, communities, to leaders, just because we've always done it a certain way doesn't mean we should keep doing that. So new ways, as you say, of looking at bidding processes. And
correct.
Are there any initiatives in Michigan happening now that you are encouraged about, ways to elevate businesses run by, owned by people of color, owned by women? Are there any initiatives where you're like, you know what, this is the way of the future?
Short answer is, oh my, yes. I think there's a lot going on. But Jamil, why don't you start?
There's a ton of efforts taking place in a lot of different communities across the state. Some are having varying degrees of success. because it really still comes down to the implementation of those. So we can have very great ideas, and we can even write it very well on paper and have an excellent implementation plan, but if it's not executed in the way in which it was. And so, you know, if you look at some of the things that are taking place here in the city of Grand Rapids, you know, like one of which is the program that we partner with, my organization partnered with the city of Grand Rapids, to where we're accelerating African-American businesses. And so we recently just had one of our participants secure $250,000 in funding that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to access without our partnership and our program assisting them in that way. And I know it's a ton of programs across the state, some in Detroit. You know, we've done different collaborations with different organizations over in Detroit.
And Terry, you were like, oh, yes, there are.
There really are. And I have to give a shout out to the New Economy Initiative in Southeast Michigan that over the past years has provided philanthropic support to build out a whole system, multiple organizations who provide varying kinds of support with a special focus on women and minority-led ventures. There's been a growth in business plan competitions like NEI Ideas and many others that help provide funding to worthy startups. And there are organizations that are really focused, that really doubling down their efforts focused on women and minority-led companies. My own organization, for example, has a program called Engage that is focused on female founders, women-led companies. And what we do is we do custom resource mapping, so we connect those female funders directly with the resources they need when they need them. So if they can sit down and talk to funders, everything from banks to venture capital and private equity funders, depending on the stage of their business. We connect them to advisors that can help them navigate that regulatory environment that they're facing. But most of all of these programs, and I'm sure Jamil does this as well, connect female and minority founders with each other so that there is a vibrant support network that's there not just for the concrete hands-on tasks, but, you know, to provide those words of encouragement and the perspective and inspiration that help you keep going and help you learn, hear the stories of other founders and how have they navigated these tricky waters. And I sometimes think that's more important than anything, to be able to have that encouragement that helps you keep going.
Access to capital, access to top talent, access to networking. Some of the ideas for making Michigan more business friendly to businesses owned by people of color, owned by women. It's been a great conversation. We want to thank Jamil Robinson, creator and founder of the Grand Rapids Area Black Businesses, and Terry Barkley, president of Inforum, that is a nonprofit that's focused on the advancement of women in business. Thank you to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Cindy.